Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network.
Welcome back to Group Answers. This is episode 78. My name is Chris, and I'm here with my co-host, always the lovely Brian Daniels.
That's a first. Lovely, that is.
And the always delightful Michael Kelly.
Should I trade delightful for
lovely? I would trade that, yes. Okay. I would make that trade.
No, I think lovely fits. I saw a picture of your jean jacket that we discussed last time. Oh. And I felt like you're moving into the loveliness
category. You a picture of that?
Or maybe that was somebody else you took a picture of.
Yeah, it was. Okay. It was.
Was it a random random stranger in the mall?
It was at Kroger. And Kroger, by the way, they know my musical taste. Does anybody else have that experience? Does anybody even go to Kroger? You probably don't, do you, Chris?
No, I do. That's our closest grocery store is Kroger. Although we do the click it thing now where you order online, you just drive up.
Just thinking about it.
Yep, they put it in your back of your car. But you like elevator music? Is that what you're saying?
No, it's the greatest hits. It's like greatest 80s hits playing over the PA or intercom, whatever it is at Kroger.
I like some 80s.
This is a fantastic mental picture of you just like working it down the aisle.
Oh yeah,
well shopping with all of your might.
I have caught myself singing along.
That's great.
In the frozen food section with DeBarge.
I've done that as well. You know what's really maddening is when they break in with "We need a cashier on one." Cashier on one. I'm like, that was the best.
Yeah, that's right. I was moving to the rhythm of the night.
That's right. Say it ain't so. Another DeBarge fan in the room. Speaking of the room, it's good to be back. How'd you think it went last week?
It is good to be back. We're in the studio. You could probably tell by the sound, but I had a lot of fun. The last episode, we were in the middle of the Lifeway store in Brian's hometown of Hendersonville, Tennessee, the metropolis. Hendersonville, Tennessee. They do have a Panera Bread, so I was excited about that. But yeah, it was fun, but I also like the studio. I don't know. There's just something more controlled about it.
I thought it went well. I mean, it was a little, I felt a little out of sorts. We got to work at it. You know, it was our first, Michael, I guess you know, it was our first outing. Well, actually, it was not our first.
We did the Southern Baptist Convention. Don't we call this a remote?
Yeah,
remote.
Right.
Exactly. But this was also
a live remote, even though it wasn't live.
This was tour stop number one of the Group Answers World Tour.
Yes, that's right.
So that was and we would like to put it out there, if you would like for us to come to your church and record one of these, or even a house party, we could do a house party. Like get together, you know, 10 or 12 friends, and we set up in the living room.
Don't think that the Group Answers show could not be effective at a house party. Don't think that for a minute.
We could rock a house party.
That's right.
Yep. All right. So I guess we should probably talk. You know, we're in the middle of December, guys. This is like the middle. This is heading into the festivities. Have you guys bought all your gifts? Are you good?
Yeah.
No?
We've started.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have bought zero gifts.
Do you buy them on Christmas Eve?
You know, I used to. Used to go to the mall. But now with Amazon, you don't have to.
That's true.
Or Lifeway.com.
That's right.
Middle December. It goes so fast these days.
Yeah. It's crazy. So, Brian, what are we talking about today?
On this episode 78, Chris and Michael, we are going to be discussing the idea or the notion of or the practice of family discipleship. So we talk about groups. You know, that's who we are and what we do on the Group Answers show. But families... And in terms of discipleship, your group life does not end, you know, whenever that group life ends. It extends to your families, and families are part of your group life, but also are part of your discipleship. Most of our listeners are going to be, I think, parents, so this extends throughout the family, but also to the kids. And I would add, just as a jumping off point, I think there's a couple of ways that you could look at this. There is the one-on-one kind of discipleship that you find like in Deuteronomy, the Shema, I think it is, as you go is what I call it. But then there's also like a family unit form of discipleship, which is probably what most people have in mind when they think of family discipleship. You know, it's a devotional of some kind on that's a part of your regular rhythms and what you use, how that works. I think some of the wild cards here are, what are the ages of your children? There's a big difference in family discipleship between, like, teens in the home, I think, and your middle schoolers and younger, and how that works. I would be interested in that if I was listening, and, you know, Chris and Michael, what you guys would have to say about that. But family discipleship as a thing and how we do it, that's today's topic.
This is, I was saying before we went on air, this is actually a tough topic for me, because I feel like it's kind of crazy coming from the guy who's all about groups and discipleship, but I feel like I haven't done a great job of discipling my family. But I think sometimes maybe it's just my perception of what that looks like. That, you know, when I think of family discipleship, I think every night getting around the table, doing some type of a devotion or topic, and then praying together. And with our schedules, that just didn't happen. You know, if we did a devotion, it was maybe once a week or once every other week, or we'd skip a couple months because we got busy. And so I think in my head, I had this perfect picture of what family discipleship looks like, and I couldn't meet it. And where do you even start? So I'm really curious, Michael. You write a lot about this topic, and you seem to do a great job of it with your family. They're a lovely family. They really are. I got to say, I said delightful earlier, but you have a lovely family.
They are lovely.
The lovely? You said?
The lovely? No, yeah. I said the, yeah.
That works, though. The lovely.
It yeah. works. Yeah. But talk to us a little bit about what does it look like, just family discipleship as a whole.
Sure. Well, thank you, first off, for saying those things about our family. I am fond of them. Generally speaking, you know, the thing.
Generally speaking, not specifically.
Right? You don't just love them; you also like them.
Yes, yeah, I do.
That's good.
You said you seem to do a great job at family discipleship. I hope that's true, but who knows if that's true or not? You know what I mean? But discipleship in general is like that. You know, I think it's important for us to remember, whether you're talking about, you know, whether you're trying to walk with your family in the faith, or whether you're trying to walk one-on-one with somebody else, or even in a group context, it's easy to congratulate yourself for some practices that you may have instituted. But my goodness, in all of those situations, really, the... at the end of the day, time will tell if it's effective or not. Now you can live in an attitude of defeat on the other side of that too, to say, well, then what if time will tell, you know, is there really any value in instituting these practices? I think there is, not only for somebody's family, but also for that person, in general. But I think with this topic in particular, you want to walk the balance in between when it comes to your family, the balance of self-congratulation. Because if you congratulate yourself too much, then, you know, when your kids get to become teenagers and they actually start making decisions that might disappoint you, then you're going to think, well, this is obviously my fault because I didn't make them memorize enough Bible verses. Mm-hmm. And it's just not true. Or conversely, if you just sort of breeze through the teenage years and your kids are, you know, after graduation, they're basically picking which nation they want to go to spend their lives in the sake of the gospel of Jesus Christ, then you think to yourself, man, I really killed the family discipleship angle with this. Behold, look at what I've done. You know, so all that to say, the way that you bridge that gap in the middle there, I think, is by faith. You know, faith is being confident that the Lord is going to make up for what we lack in all circumstances, including this. So there's not one of us among us that is the expert in family discipleship. All of us are just sort of bumbling and stumbling our way forward, trusting that the Lord can make up for what we lack. Now, when you come at it from that perspective, that I'm just stumbling forward in this as a dad or as a mom. I'm trying to do the best I can, believing that the Lord can take this and make something out of it, then it really frees you to be able to actually engage and do some things rather than just sort of always wishing that your family had more spiritual conversations or were more active in the faith together. It actually frees you up to start doing some stuff.
That's good. How old are your kids, Michael?
Yeah, so we've got a 14-year-old, an 11-year-old, and an 8-year-old.
So you're
right now.
You've hit the younger stage. You're hitting the teenage stage.
Yep, we got a couple of middle schoolers and one elementary school
kid. Yeah, I think there are a lot of families out there that are listening to this who probably have that guilty feeling, kind of like I do. And that's such a good point that we do what we can and God fills in the rest. But where would you say is a good starting point? If family out there has, you know, maybe they've never done a devotional together, maybe they've never prayed together, and they're like, where do we start?
Right.
I've got kids, what do I do?
I think the most obvious place to start and the simplest place to start is just to commit to have a single conversation after church once a week and to just ask questions and talk about what you learned at church. If it's young kids, to ask them questions. What was your Bible story about today?
Jesus.
And that's fine. I mean, hopefully that is one of the answers. But then to start asking those questions. You know, the more weeks that you do, and maybe you decide this is always going to be what our conversation is in the car leaving church, and you commit to it. Every week after we leave church, this is what our conversation is going to be, or this is what we're going to do after lunch. There's a guy that I serve with at church who has told his kids, guys, listen, at lunch, if you can't tell me one thing that you learned from the sermon on Sunday, then you're going to listen to it again on the podcast. So
that's good.
There's all different kinds of ways that you can do this. But that is one simple way to do it. It's just to say, we're going to talk about what we learned at church. One of the things that you do when you make that choice is you are, for your family, starting to normalize spiritual conversations. And I think that's really what we want. I mean, if your goal is to have a devotion every day with your family, and that's all you do, it's like just 10 or 15 minutes of looking at the Bible, and you never talk about God and Jesus and faith any other time except for these few select moments. Well, I would say this is not really discipleship. Discipleship is walking along together. So the end game here is you want the culture of your family to be such that you freely talk at both set-aside moments, but then it just general moments. You freely talk about the things of God, of faith, the gospel. You are normalizing these conversations for your children, for your family.
One of the things that I've noticed that does and did in our family, so my daughters are 24 and 20, is in doing that and making that a part of your regular rhythms, you open up something that I would call like just a line of communication. So as they do grow up, they're more likely to come to you, Dad, or, you know, in your case, Jana, or, you know, Mom, with their questions.
Yeah.
Instead of going somewhere else or just making something up.
Yeah.
So just having that dialogue contributes to a discipleship that's latent and unexpected.
Yeah. Well, discipleship is like that, I think, in general. As you never know when you're going to come upon a holy moment, you know? And a lot of time these moments are just, they're paper thin. And it's just this moment in time that, for whatever reason, this seems to be the moment in which the Spirit of God has chosen to work. And it's there 1 minute, and oftentimes it feels like it's gone the next. Well, the way that you lay the groundwork, like you're saying, the way that you lay the groundwork to be able to make the most of those opportunities is through the everyday normalization kind of stuff. Another way to think about it is in terms of time. So, you know, a lot of parents talk about it's not quantity time, it's quality time that you spend with your kids. And so, you know, they'll dedicate, okay, here's the special weekend where I'm going to take my son or my daughter away, and this is the rite of passage, and this is when we talk about what it means to be a man or a woman of God and faith and that kind of thing. That's fine, I guess, so far as it goes. I feel like for most of us, though, that quantity time paves the way for quality time. So you're going to spend a ton of quantity time with your children, and it's going to feel like just the day-to-day kind of stuff. But if you normalize gospel conversations in the quantity time, then it really makes it, it paves the way. It lays the groundwork for those few moments that just pop out of nowhere, and you don't know exactly where, you don't know when they're coming or when they're going to leave.
Do you think it's also important, talking about time, to make sure that your kids are exposed to, I mean, to church, to youth group environments, even if they don't want to? I was, you know, as a kid, I would, you know, occasionally not want to go to church. And I would say, Mom, you know, I don't want to go. She would go, no, you get to go to church. And it just wasn't a choice. I mean, unless I was running like 104 degree feet, and even sometimes then I would end up on the back row away from everybody else. Maybe not the healthiest way to raise your kids, but I mean, that was, you know, I've also heard, you know, I had a drug problem growing up. My parents drug me to church every Sunday, but I think that was important. And I see that, you know, in my kids, they don't, as a teenager, they don't always want to go, but it's not even a choice in our household because I want to expose them to that environment because hopefully they are going to catch something. They are going to hear something. I love the idea of, you know, quote three things back to me or you're going to listen to it again.
Yeah.
And some people would think that's more legalistic, but don't you think that's important that you expose them to that environment?
I do think that's important. I think from an idealistic standpoint, I mean, it would be awesome if we rolled out of bed every Sunday morning and the kids came bouncing downstairs and they were like, it's Sunday. I can't wait to go and dig more deeply into the mysteries of God and Jesus Christ. I can't wait to worship it. That's never happened in our house. not a single time has it happened. So some would make the argument to say, well, you shouldn't then make your kids go to church because if you do that, they're gonna end up rebelling or you're forcing this religion on them when they need to choose it. I just don't think that's true. And here are a few reasons why. So you guys forgive me. I'm kind of thinking about these right now. I don't have it necessarily listed in front of me, but a few reasons why I do think it's important to, as a parent, that you do make your kids go to church, even if they don't want to. One is because it establishes your authority in your home. Like, you're the parent. You have the God-given authority in your home to exercise what you believe is right. Now, at some point, the kids won't live in that home, and so that authority will be diminished somewhat. But as it stands for right now, you're the authority. So exercise the authority in a godly way. Another reason that I think it's important that you make them go, even if they don't want to, is because, Chris, you alluded to this a minute ago, that you are laying seeds that will grow in the future. It's amazing to me, not just in church, but in other environments, how often my kids will say something like, you remember when you said X and Y? And I will say, no, I don't remember that at all. And it's from some conversation 3.5 years ago when I happened to say a sentence, but they remembered. The same thing happens with spiritual topics, I think. These are seeds of the gospel that are being, I mean, they're being laid down in the soil, and it may take some time for them to grow. And then here's a third reason why I think it's important to make them go, is that just because you don't have a taste for something in the moment doesn't mean it's the wrong thing. So let me liken it this way. When I was a kid, I did not eat vegetables. I didn't want to eat vegetables. Now, my parents had a choice. They could say, you know what? He doesn't want to eat vegetables, so we're not going to make him eat vegetables. We're just going to trust that someday he will desire to eat vegetables and it will be more healthy for him. My parents did not choose that route. They said, no, I know you know you're not going to eat vegetables, but you're going to eat them anyway. Tastes change over time. So the more that you eat vegetables, you actually develop a taste for it. Or coffee. I didn't used to like coffee, but the more I drank coffee, I sort of developed this taste. One of the reasons our kids don't like church sometimes is because they don't have the taste for it yet. And it takes a while for them to acquire that taste over the course of you know, this repetitive day after day, that kind of thing. So in faith, we still put them in church believing that at some point they're going to acquire a taste for the spiritual things.
So what happens when the Bible and humanity collide? Well, not what you'd expect. On Living Ineffective, a new podcast from Christianity Today and the Christian Standard Bible, you will hear difficult questions and find surprising answers about how God's Word has changed the world and what that means for your everyday life. Go listen to Living Ineffective now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitch, or wherever you get your podcasts. Living Ineffective is presented by the Christian Standard Bible, a Bible translation that is accurate, readable, and shareable. You can find out more at csbible.com.
As I've traveled deeper into this discipleship conversation that we've been engaging Chris and Michael on the Group Answers show, I've learned, sadly, that a lot of people that we see in church and, you know, in our church families and walks of life weren't never discipled. And so I'm sure we have parents that want to disciple, you know, maybe be more of leaders in the discipling of their children, but weren't discipled themselves. What counsel or advice do you have for in that situation, in that scenario?
I mean, for this one, I think what I would say is you're not alone. Like, join the club, you know? Comparatively few people.
That's an epidemic.
Yeah, grew up like this. And even the ones that did grow up like this, those parents are just like we are. They didn't have the market cornered on what it looks like to disciple your family. They were just bumbling and stumbling forward as well. So join the club. But I would also say, you know, don't use that as a crutch to lean on. Use it as motivation for the way you want to raise your family. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I would say is it's not that complicated. It doesn't have to be that complicated.
That's good.
It just doesn't. And recognize that you're not going to be able to do everything, but just do something. Like we said, sometimes the easiest thing to do is just one conversation. That's realistic. It's attainable. You're going to be at church. Have one conversation a week, and then use that as a building block to go forward. So just do it.
I think we do that with discipleship as a whole. We make it so complicated.
Yeah,
or sounds it sounds so complicated. There's steps and books and. No, it starts with a conversation. It starts with a prayer. You know, it's not that complicated. I would encourage any parents too, if you're not in a discipling small group or with a group of friends, you know, start there as well. You need to be discipled. You know, as you're discipling your kids, you need to be discipled. And again, it's not that complicated. Just get in a group, get in a relationship with somebody else who's one step ahead of you and start having those conversations that's going to help you. And then you're going to be able to pass on to your family and your kids.
This is, we didn't talk about this, so I hope I'm not violating the rules here, but
there are no rules.
Right. So I would recommend three resources.
That was my next question.
Was it? Okay, yep. Good. So three resources that are very simple, that our family has used, that they're just really easy to use. That's another thing I would say about this is don't feel like you've got to recreate the wheel. You know, there are resources there that will help you. So let me give you a couple of books and then another one. So one book is called Long Story Short, and this is a book that's really good, probably for kids that are, I would say, 10 or 11 years and under, but it's going to give you a daily devotion that's going to walk chronologically through the Old Testament. It'll give you a Bible story to read, three or four questions to ask the kids to make sure they understand in a way that you can pray. It's Christ-centered. It brings the content back to the gospel, and each one of them takes, I would say, 10 to 12 minutes. It's incredibly easy to use, and it's very well done. Another resource I would recommend is called the Gospel Project At Home Edition. So here at Lifeway, we create the Gospel Project. It's a curriculum, but we've released this year a version of it to be used at home for people, which I think will be really, really helpful. And then if you're just getting started, I've actually written a little booklet about this. You don't have to buy it. It is for free. It's available at the website where I blog every day, which is Michael Kelly. You spell my last name KELLEY.co. And over there on the side, there's a little place where you can download a PDF, and it's I forget how many. I should have looked before I came in here, but I forget how many keys it is. But it's like 10 keys or 10 steps to starting a family devotion. But like I said, it's free. You could download it. It's not rocket science. It's not mystical either. It's just some real practical kind of things that you could use to implement this.
Here's a question I have. Can a case be made for working out your faith together and taking the opportunity to just like extend the invitation to your children and say, let's do this together in those cases, to where maybe the mom or the dad doesn't feel so equipped? You know, and I think it's also important to remember that you don't have to carry the burden of authority. Scripture has done that for us. Mm-hmm. God is the ultimate authority room. So one of the things I've learned in terms of family discipleship is, when in doubt, go to the Bible. I know that sounds just like an obvious answer, but just emerging out of your own devotional time, take your questions to family time and look at that text and wrestle with it as a group. Now, obviously, you know, that's an age-appropriate thing, but is that something that works here? I mean, and just I would think as a kid— you know, not the youngest, but as early as 6 or 7 and older, might appreciate that opportunity to be a part of my own discipleship.
So this is, we've been doing this for a little while. For several years, we've been doing like the daily family devotion thing. And 2 years ago, we decided to make a shift to where everybody instead of I was doing it all the time, we wanted our kids, because they were getting older, we wanted them to take some ownership in this process. We also wanted them to understand that I can do this for other people. I can actually do this. So we've gotten into the rhythm now where a different person leads the devotion every day. So like I'll do Mondays, and Jana, my wife, will do Tuesdays. Joshua, my 14-year-old, is Wednesdays. Andy, my daughter, is Thursdays. And Christian, the 8-year-old, does Fridays. And they do the same thing that the adults do. You know, they use the book and they read the Bible story, or they ask somebody to read the Bible study. But hopefully, by God's grace, what it does is it develops some leadership principles inside of them as well. It's a great point.
That's good. That's great stuff, Michael. Thank you so much. And the resources that Michael mentioned will be in the show notes. If you're listening to this on iTunes, you can find those at lifeway.com/groups and just go to the podcast. And so you can get links to all of those along with some of the quotes and some of the other things that we talked about. So thanks for checking that out. Brian, we're a part of a pretty cool network, and we want to talk about one of those other sister podcasts.
I love that term. Lifeway Leadership Podcast Network, that we have only joined recently, but you know, the weeks are piling up. This is like the fourth or fifth time, right? And so, yeah, as a part of that network, I would just like to reintroduce to you the Ask Me Anything podcast with co-hosts J.D. Greer and Todd Unzicker. And for those of you that don't know, just Ask Me Anything trivia, Todd Unzicker used to write for Rivals.com. He was a beat writer for the University of Georgia football team. And, of course, J.D. Greer is an author and current president of the Southern Baptist Convention and a friend of the show. In this show, Todd and J.D. will provide you with honest answers to some of your toughest questions. In each episode, you will hear Pastor J.D. answer a theological, ethical, or leadership question. So whether you're attending, serving, or leading in the church, Chris, Michael, this podcast is for you.
I've listened to it. It's great. Each episode's about 7 to 10 minutes.
Yeah,
it's
you can't beat that.
No, it's one question, and JD tackles it head on. And the week that it debuted, they actually went to number one on the iTunes podcast, Christian podcast. And so I feel like our listeners should take us to number one at this point.
Yeah, I would add that 7 minutes would only be aspirational for us.
That's just our banter.
That's right. That's what it does.
Speaking of iTunes, it helps us a lot if you'll go and rate us. Hopefully you'll give us some 5 stars and also comment. I looked the other day and there's one comment, and it's from like 3 years ago. And that lady didn't love us. So we have one not great comment out there. She just thought it was too long. That was her comment. But we would love to cover that comment up with some good ones. So please go rate us on iTunes, comment. It helps other people see it. So it really is helpful. Well, that's going to wrap it up for episode 78. Thanks for joining us on Group Answers. We will see you next time.